Welcome everyone to the final special episode of the MPL show for the 2019-20 season. And in this Last in the Present series, this week, we're going to be picking our manager of the season. And joining me here, with the weight of the world on their shoulders, we're joined by Mr. James Hayes, who's actually surprisingly a lot lighter on his shoulders nowadays after a haircut this morning. James, hello.
I was camping out this morning for it. I couldn't handle it anymore.
Brilliant stuff. certainly a stranger to the barbers nowadays. Swampy.
that's very true, Benjamin, but you do know and realise that I'm actually very loyal to my my barbers, and my barber happens to be in Heaton Chapel next to the award-winning Heaton Hop. So I can't go back until at least the 10th of July. I can say, Ben, the differences between you and I is my hair has looked like this only for 6 months, yours has looked like that for the last 10 years.
You did ask for that.
Simo's here as well, non-league reporter from Cheshire. Hello, Simo.
Hello.
And Berkey's back, everyone. Hello, Berkey. From 26-0.
Hiya, Ben. And I'd like to say Swamp is absolutely right as well. You can't just cast your barber asunder. When I lived in Penzance, my barber was still Andy on Stockport Road. But, yeah, I mean, I'd come up and get my hair cut by Andy. You can't just change your barber.
It's not about loyalty. Yeah. It's a wise decision because you don't want to let any Tom, Dick or Harry loose on your hair, do you? It's very important. So on that note, welcome everyone to the MPL show. And this over the last seven weeks, isn't it, James? We've been discussing various positions on the pitch. And now in this final episode, we're going to be nailing our colours to the mast. That is manager. So let's start at the bottom of the table and let's start with Stafford Rangers. They had Alex Meacham and Andy Fearn. Very turbulent campaign since the end of the season. Andy Fearn's moved up to the boardroom. Alex Meacham's left the club. I do have to say, though, every time I spoke to Andy Fearn during the season, I'll come to you, Simo, for this, but every time I spoke to Andy Fearn during the season, you know, he was talking about the injuries that Stafford had, and as soon as he gets some key players back, they'll start to close the gap. And to be fair, they were closing the gap before the end of the season.
Yeah, they were. It would have been interesting to see how close they would have got. My impression at the time was they were running out of time, and I think it probably would have just been a stretch. But they were starting to pick up points to make it interesting, and you know, it would have been one of the old classic great escapes if they managed to pull it off. I am genuinely fascinated to see how the dynamic will work there next season with Andy Fearn kind of looking after transfers and negotiations, and obviously Jody Banham going in as manager, and it'd be interesting. They've not worked together before, as far as I'm aware, so it'd be interesting to see how that kind of unfolds. Great to see Jody back, a guy that, you know, a manager that we all admire, we all like, so I wish him well.
Burkett, we might as well stay with Jody Banham, because like Simo says, it's a big job for next season, but he had a big job last season as well, looking for Aston United to bounce back, and it didn't quite work out for Jody, did it, in the difficult third season?
No, but by his own admission, he got the recruitment wrong. Jody, he'll have learnt from his experience at Aston, no question about it, and yeah, I expect Stafford to be doing much better next year.
James, let's segue now to Atherton Coles, because obviously Michael Clegg has gone to Aston. He left Atherton Coles after, I think we could safely say, quite a successful stint at the club. Brad Cook's come in December. He's got a long association with the club himself. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Atherton Coles next season with Brad in charge. But James, let's talk about Michael Clegg.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they did change Aston's season ground. The other having team that didn't really respond well to begin with the promotion. When I went over to Aston, so obviously we are going to say the word manager bounce several times in this podcast, because let's be honest, there was a few.
I think they're going to be one of the most fascinating clubs next season, because this year, with the change of in the boardroom, lots of ambition, lots of noise about what they wanted to do this season, and as we mentioned earlier, about increasing the budget substantially and look at the names in which they were able to bring in, and it completely backfired. They massively, massively underachieved. So the reason I'm fascinated by them is kind of what tone they're going to set now. I'd be interested to see how Cleggy kind of manages this, whether it'll be a much more toned down Ashton in terms of what they say about what they're going to do, and that's what makes them really interesting to me. I think they'll be strong, because I think Cleggy's a good manager, but it's how they kind of set the the mood around the club going to be really interesting to me.
Let's go to Matlock next. Steve Kittrick started the campaign, but a new chapter at the club under Paul Phillips.
Yeah, they recruited interestingly so far. I mean, Sefton Gonzalez going there. He was at South Shields, of course, for the final half of the season last campaign. He's one of those players who's either going to be absolutely brilliant and be adored by the fans, the management and the other players, or he's going to sink without trace. I really, really hope that it's a good match for him there. And I don't see why it wouldn't be. I think they might have played together at Drawston, actually, briefly, Phil and Sefton. But yeah, there's going to be an expectation on their shoulders this year. And you've got to remember, Philo's been there before. He's got Ashton to the playoffs a couple of occasions when they weren't fancied whatsoever. Done brilliantly well with Steve Halford alongside him. Also, the division below, of course, with Mosley, got them up into the playoffs too. So he has got a pedigree.
And Buxton last year.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Grantham Town then. Paul Rawdon and Russ Cousins stepping aside towards the end of the season. There is a bit of a tricky year for Grantham.
They're another team that, obviously, there's been changes off there's been changes off the field. High profile managers got in. Well, that has happened previously. Ian Culverhouse went in there and it didn't work out. So it'll be interesting to see how Martin McIntosh fares. Some interesting signings so far. A little bit of an element of getting the band back together. He's gone and got some of the former guys that he did well with at Buxton so far. The chairman did an interview with you, Ben, just before the end of the season, suggesting that he's going to have more money to spend. So yeah, that would hint that Grantham's aspirations, if not necessarily going to be challenging for a playoffs place, are certainly going to be much higher than a survival fight next season, which is pretty much where they've been for the past couple of years. Survival has represented success for them. So they're another team going into next year. I'm intrigued to see where they kind of pitch their aspirations, because they've gone for another manager we all respect and who's got a good track record at this level, and whether they can kind of make that breakthrough in the top half of the table will be really interesting.
And that takes us, Berkey, to Buxton and Gary Haywood, who came in December, leaving Hensford, and then more or less at the same time taking over at Buxton. A manager with good pedigree, but saying that, they didn't really move too far away from the relegation zone, did they?
No, not really. And stylistically, they stayed pretty much the same. Buxton were playing decent football, you know, under Paul Phillips. And for whatever reason, it just weren't quite clicking for him that season. They had, on paper, a very good team there. And I don't know, maybe the confidence was just a little bit down. Things weren't going for him at the start of the campaign, and it just never quite clicked for him. But they had enough quality there to never really be in major trouble at the bottom. I don't think they would have been relegated if the season had gone its full length. And they have got the basis there of a very good team. Whichever direction it goes in, you know, yet to be decided. But there's a chance, you know, with Buxton that there could be a resurrection there, that we see the Buxton of a couple of seasons ago again. And it could be, is it too early to say dark horses?
save it for our preview show in December.
They're massively underachieved with, you know, even with the change of manager, they're still underachieved. They would have been, I believe with Berkey saying, no, yes, they would have been safe. They actually, their last six games were, I think, in the top five of the form guide. Yeah, I think they were in the top five or six. So they were doing quite well. I think they got 12 points from the six games. And FC at the time, who were second, were only on in eighth place on 10 points. So they'd certainly been going the right way, and they would have been fine.
One team who was going in the right direction on the early half of the season was Radcliffe, and then they weren't going in the right direction after the new year. So, James, I'll come to you. John Macken was there, left in January. Then there was a series of caretaker managers who came in. Lee Fowler's eventually took over. Obviously, it's too early to say about Lee Fowler, but John Macken, in the first half of the season, certainly was knocking out of the park, really, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, again, who'd have thought Radcliffe, bird at Christmas. I want to bring Franken as well, because they managed to keep that atmosphere going from last season in the First Division West. They didn't really make any changes, apart from the one big one, which was Tyree Sinclair instead of somebody Oluwabi. And you can see it was working. Morale was up. It was after, obviously, the second we lost Tyrese is when the season ended. think there was some disagreements, and that's when we ended up going the way it was. And obviously now, a huge rebuild job.
Isn't it odd that the next team I'm going to talk about, Michelover Sports, have the same number of points as Radcliffe? They did have three games in hand, in all fairness, but I'm going to suggest John McGrath was one of the best performing managers all the way through the season.
Yeah, I don't have an argument with that. Obviously, you know, we probably all got slightly different criteria of what we've been looking at in the run-up to today's show to kind of gauge who's done a good job and who's not. I mean, Michelover, it looks like they did tail off quite significantly just before the season was curtailed, but they were running consistently in the top 10 for most of the campaign, which is represented a massive improvement on last season when they just avoided being relegated. So, I mean, look, Michelover are one of those clubs that are probably still punching above their weight to even be playing it at this level in terms of the relative size of the club and kind of the budget that they will have. So you've got to always bear that in mind when you're analysing how Michelover have done. But it did get quite crowded in the middle of that table, so it was very fluid. And I mean, we'll come on to Witten in a minute. They're another team that was, again, running in the top 10 and then a couple of bad results and teams would slip. So it does change ever so slightly how you would analyse their season. But again, interesting signing so far. Gives youth a chance, which to me deserves massive credit. I know he does marry that, of course, with the experience that we talked about often. But, you know, a manager I really admire. I do wonder how far he can take them, but that's to be seen in the kind of next year or two, I think.
I mean, it's interesting how we could measure success for managers, because we're going to talk about Carl McCauley in a second. But for John McGrath, Michelover were, what, minutes away from being relegated last season. And to perform the way they had done, to build the squad the way he has done, and to set them up as well for a potential new chapter at the club of development and that kind of thing on and off the pitch. That seems to me to be a good way of measuring successful managers, and clearly John succeeded.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Michelover are a bit of a crossroads at the moment. That for a few seasons, they've been in this division and they've always had a fight on their hands. It's never really been clear-cut that they're doing really well or, you know, they're going to have no issues. Even this season, you know, they've had peaks and troughs. So the challenge now is to establish themselves as a step three side, a true step three side who, you know, they might flirt with relegation every now and again, but generally speaking, they're going to be there and a respected team at this level. I'm not saying they're not respected now, obviously, but you know what I mean. If you can improve year on year, even if it's only by 1 point, in 10 years' time, you're challenging for the playoffs. In 15 years' time, you get promoted. I know it's a very long game there, but it just gradual improvements, and there's no reason to go hell for leather for it. You know, just make sure you've got a good club there, a good structure, and everyone will be happy. Nantwich are the team to emulate there. They're a team who've come up from the North West Counties over the last few years and really established themselves as the force at step three.
Well, Simo, should say the next thing I'm going to say, no one truly knows the budgets of football clubs in this division, but you have a general sense of where clubs are and that kind of thing, based purely upon the squad sizes and the types of players they've got. Another way of measuring a manager's success is what they've done within their financial constraints. So that takes us to Carl McCauley at Witten Albion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, looking purely at the numbers, it looks like they've regressed ever so slightly this year because they had two very impressive top 10 finishes after getting promoted from the First Division South. And that's probably a fair assessment, but there are mitigating circumstances. They've had horrendous luck with injuries this season to key players, and they also lost a couple of key players to higher ranked clubs and weren't able to replace them. And that was a big reason why they weren't able to kind of, I mean, I'm not saying they couldn't have still finished in the top 10, but it was looking unlikely at the time that the season finished because of the lads that they'd lost. But yeah, if you, I mean, at the start of every season, since Carl's been there and since he's been in the Premier Division, you look at what he's got available to spend, and they're in bottom third budget without any shadow of a doubt. So to have two top 10 finishes is ridiculous, really, from what they've done. But to be nowhere near a survival fight, and don't forget, last year, before the start of the season, everybody took a pay cut, including the manager. So that was also in the mix going into this season. So they're already going in under a cloud after reducing the budget even further. Now, the board has got in front of them an improved budget for next season. But I was talking to Carl last week, and we were saying that he has got a little bit more money to spend, but all that will do is just elevate him ever so slightly into just the lower mid-table in terms of what clubs have got. However, because of his reputation of eking so much out of those limited resources, it probably does make them quite dangerous going into next season. And they've already made some eye-catching signings. So it'll be really interesting to see, with just that little bit more flexibility, how much further he can take them. But and I often wonder how managers feel about being kind of branded as someone who can only work with very little money. Because obviously, he was at Vauxhall Motors for a long time as well. So that's his kind of selling point, that he can kind of achieve great things with limited resources. And I don't know how he necessarily feels about that, but we'll see what they can do next year. I do expect them to do better, though, based on the fact he's got a little bit more room for manoeuvre.
He's the canniest manager in the division.
Yeah.
Swampy, I'll come to you for the next manager, because another way of judging success is a manager who comes in and steadies the ship, and that takes us to Bamber Bridge. Mick Taylor left in April, then Joey Collins stood down in December, and then Jamie Milligan walks into the gaff. He's a proper whirlwind and has transformed the fortunes of Bamber Bridge into an exciting prospect for next season, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, all the pedigree of Mr. Milligan, as both as a player and also an assistant, and also now as a manager. I think Bamber probably in a very similar vein to Witten, and perhaps have probably very, very similar budgets, because again, there's not a huge amount of money swinging around at Bamber Bridge. But he's done a tremendous job. They on the form guide, they were doing really well. They were higher echelons. I think they're about 14th. They're 14th at the time when the division stopped, and 40 points, if I'm right. So, no, 13 on 40. Yeah, the 13th position on 40 points. So they were going in the right direction. They've got some talented players there. If you can keep them, it'll be an interesting season for them moving forward. But as I say, yeah, they looked at one stage. They were in 3-4, weren't they? Everyone was thinking perhaps they're a team that are going to get relegated this season. But they actually turned it round and play some great football, and obviously the great result against FC United of Manchester at their place, where they absolutely battered, and I mean really battered, FC with a great, great footballing performance. So if they could emulate that going forward, they're going to be the only team again, I think, that just want to settle into the Northern Premier Division, because it's the highest they've ever been, and therefore when you don't want to run before you can walk, and so on and so forth. So they're going to get used to the division and become a mainstay of the Northern Premier Division, and then hopefully then they can develop a bit further.
Birke, I'll come to you for the next manager, because I mentioned Jamie Milligan steadying the ship. Simon Howarth at Stalybridge Celtic. Last season it was what it was. This season it's been much, much better. Let's put it that way.
Well, the first half of the season was, but the second half of the season kind of reverted to type from the last 5 years, didn't it? They just fell away completely over Christmas. No idea what happened, but they just lost their flow. I really don't know why, but that first 4 or 5 months of the campaign was absolutely brilliant from Stalybridge. The fans at Bowerfold were absolutely buzzing for the first time in 10 years, and the good times were back. But then they fell away really quick. I just don't know, really don't know what happened. And when you sort of do your predictions about what's going to happen next season, you always look at how a team has performed in the last couple of months. You use the form guide as a direction of travel for a club. And you look at Stalybridge and go, well, can they finish top half next season? Well, they should do, because you expect that they'll have the players there. And the manager's a good manager. He proved himself down at Clitheroe.
They've also got a big rebuild on, haven't they, Berkey? Look who's gone already. You know, Bako, Osai, Dent. You know, he's kind of the spine of his team has gone. So he already, you know, he's already got a big job on to replace some of the Smalley's gone as well. But that's right down the centre of the team. He's got to rebuild.
But he probably felt he needed to clear out. All right, Darius Osei going, that may well have been the trigger, actually, for their drop in form. But they weren't a one-man team, not by a long shot.
I mean, they showed glimpses after the new year, didn't they? Like, 2-0 draw against South Shields, didn't they? And I can't remember who else. They beat someone else, didn't they?
Well, that's the game where they signed Darius Osei after.
but it was Gainsborough that Stalybridge beat towards the end of the season. I'll go to Gainsborough now. Good segue, Ben. Good segue. Solid. Right, so in a second, Simo, when we discuss Scarborough, I'm going to come to you for your new management bounce table and that kind of thing. You've got that somewhere, I'd imagine? Somewhere.
Oh, of course. I've got some, I'm looking forward to sharing a good stat with you in a minute.
Great stuff. Right, Gainsborough then. Liam King took over towards the end of the last season and they had that new management bounce. It didn't work out at the start of this season. Curtis Woodhouse leaves Tadcaster, joins Gainsborough in October, and as a result, both you, Simo, and James have put him in your shortlist for manager of the season.
Well, for me, he is the manager of the season, and I'll give you me first stat. If the season started on the 1st of November when Curtis Woodhouse took over at Gainsborough, where do you think they would have finished?
Third.
I can tell you.
Third. Only FC United and South Shields picked up more points than Gainsborough. Well, on points per game, they would have pushed South Shields. So that's how well Gainsborough did under Curtis Woodhouse. And I think you have to remember, the other point I would make in making his case is, they were second bottom when he went in. They had 5 points by the first weekend in November. They were in serious trouble after spending a fortune on that team, assembling that team at the end of the previous season when King had gone in, and then over the summer adding to it. They were probably the oldest team in the Premier Division, by the way, and I do wonder if that was a factor in how many struggles they had. But the scale of the turnaround was jaw-dropping when you look at the numbers. So that he turned them into what they'd aspired to be, which is challenging for the playoffs. So that's why I would make my case. I know I'm going to get shot down, but on the numbers, it's hard to argue against the job Curtis has done there.
I'm right in saying, Ben, that he made his debut as the manager of Gainsborough against FC United at Broadhurst. And you can see then that it wasn't his team. You could see quite clearly that day it wasn't his team. He got them out a bit of fighting spirit and they worked hard. And then from then on, he went on and, as I say, he's done tremendously well. If he keeps that form going for next season, there will be a study of force to recommend.
Let's talk about Dave McGurk at Hyde United. Yeah. Now, Birkett.
Birkett. Yes.
He's in your shortlist, flying the flag.
Well, yeah, of course he is. Right at the top of my shortlist, Ben.
But I'm going to suggest, rather than being a biased pick, it's justified because he's done a pretty good job this year, in all fairness.
Ben, I don't... You know me. I take off my Hyde United hat when I'm in here. I put my Scarborough hat on. No, I'd try and be as unbiased as possible. And you've got to look at these things dispassionately. Otherwise, people are going to go, oh, he's just saying that because he supports such and such a team or adding that. You've got to look at it with a clear head. And for Hyde to finish, all right, in a curtailed season in 10th place, but they were going up as well. It wouldn't surprise me if Hyde finished in 8th position this last season. He performed absolute miracles. His first season as a manager as well. Learning the ropes, learning about signing players, learning about everything, absolutely everything that goes on with it. Admit, all right, he'd been an assistant manager for a couple of seasons before, but being at the helm is completely different. And he thought things were going fantastically well at the start, you know, beating FC United away, beating South Shields away in the first 3 games, no problem at all. But then things got tough, and then we found out what Dave McGurk was about. He had a big clean out. He had to. He absolutely had to. But he had no money to do it. And he scrimped and he saved. And he hustled to bring in the best that he possibly could on a minimal budget. And for Hyde United to be in the top half of that division last season was a miracle. It was brilliant.
I was going to say also, you've got context is key. Don't look at who he was following, a guy who is unbelievably popular, very, very successful. And that's hard. I mean, it's hard for anyone to follow a kind of a character like Daz, but for a manager who's doing it for the first time, that could have been quite daunting. I know Daz was there in the background, but I know he was also careful to let Dave do his own thing. And that's so important when you've stepped aside. But that's in the mix as well for McGurk, isn't it, Berkey? Because that's not easy to follow a guy like that.
No, absolutely. And of course, remember after the previous season, Matt Worthington died.
Yeah.
Which the club CEO, it really put the club in a difficult position and it was a real, real blow for the club, not just financially, but personally as well. He was very well liked there. He was the person who brought in Daz Kelly, you know, and ultimately, you know, when Dave McGirt came in, it was a natural progression from bringing Daz in. So I genuinely think that Dave McGirt has got to be in the conversation for Manager of the Year. I really, really do.
From Dave McGirt to Nick Gray. Simo, that's an interesting question about what Morpeth do next. But Nick Gray's been there since, well, nearly 10 years at the club. And I think it's safe to say this has been the best year that under his tenure.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, they're one of the teams you have to remember, they've never played at this level before. We've touched on a couple of clubs who've been in that position. And famously, on PPG, they would have been in the playoffs if the season had been decided like that. So that shows you the trajectory that they were on. Look, I had Nicky Gray on my list initially, and this is absolutely no reflection on him at all. I still think he's done a tremendous job. And the only reason I removed him is that the resources at his disposal are significantly more than some of the other guys that are kept on the list. And look at the profile of signings that he was able to make, and they continue to make, by the way, going into next season under Turnbull. And Nicky Gray's still going to be around, by the way. He's going to be looking at, he's got a different job, but he's still going to be in the background at Morpeth. And they'll be ambitious to take the next step next season. They'll want to be right in the thick of it, challenging for promotion. And who's to say that they can't be? They've got the resources to do it. So, yeah, brilliant job. Would have been in the playoffs. I think they would have done enough, and you have to praise him for what he's done there. But the only thing you would say is, you know, we sit here and say, oh, look how much money they've had to spend. You still have to spend it wisely. You still have to put together a coherent team, and we shouldn't take that away from Morpeth and one or two of the other teams that we'll come on to. But that's the only reason I just kind of took him out of my top three, is that he just had the advantage of being able to spend a bit more money.
No. The one thing about him, which has been good, he's been there for 10 years. He's had the backing and support of a chairman who, you know, has been involved in that football club and has a passion for the football club. So they play some very, very attractive football. They've had good success in the Northern Division. They've been to Wembley in the FA Vars. You know, and as a football club, they've done very, very well. They're a team that, they're like a Spennymoor. Spennymoor are a team that played good, exciting, attractive football. Having him around next season is going to be massively influential and beneficial to the new manager that comes in.
Is it, though?
I think initially, yes, because...
Well, they've hired Steve Turnbull, who's a senior player. And the first couple of interviews that Turnbull has done indicates that he's made up that Gray's going to be around. They know each other. He's played for him. It's his first managerial job, so it's a little bit of a gamble from Morpeth, by the way. So he will have that know-how to tap into. If I was him, I would tap into it. But I see what you're saying. It's how you manage those relationships. We talked about McGurk and Kelly before. Sometimes it can go really well. Sometimes it can be a bad thing that your predecessor's still around.
One thing that's very interesting, though, is that the next major game for them was against FC United of Manchester away at home. FC would have gone there on the Tuesday evening. That would have been that's a game that could have decided FC's season and indeed their season. But we'll never get to know about it. And luckily, Ben didn't have to travel all the way up to Morpeth on a Tuesday night.
Because I was the only one going as well, just to say. Right, okay, let's talk about Scarborough. Who should we go to? Birke. Why not? Steve Kitchen left in March. It didn't work out for John Deasy in the end. Darren Kelly comes in November, and lo and behold, it went the way everyone was expecting. So,
yeah, absolutely. We've spoken plenty of times before about Darren Kelly and his man motivation skills, but it's not just that. He's one of the few UEFA pro coaches in non-league football. This isn't like a continental A licence. This is a continental pro licence. He's the absolute top of the tree. He's been there and done that with all the top coaches in the world. He knows exactly how to coach a football team. He's learning. All right, you can do all the stuff you want on paper, but it's about putting that into practice. It doesn't work for everybody. But with Daz Kelly, he's more than capable of putting all his skills onto the football field, onto the training park. And I don't want to say he's wasted in non-league football, but he should be a Football League manager. He really, really should. He's got the knowledge. He's got the passion. He's got the know-how. He's got it's the full package of a manager. He's exactly what any football club would want from their manager. If he's involved in a team, he loves that club. He thinks of nothing else but bettering that club and that team. And we loved him at Hyde United. They love him up at the Flamingoland Stadium. And wherever he lands next, they'll love him there too.
I mean, we talked a couple of times today about going into a toxic environment and trying to sort it out. Well, he absolutely had to do that at Scarborough. They weren't necessarily as far down the table as some of the other managerial changes because they were 14th when he went in, but my God, were they in serious trouble. So as well as Abbott being a brilliant coach, he had to go in there and use that charisma and that force of will that we've talked about to turn that around. He didn't actually make that many signings. He turned around the group that he inherited. Now, obviously, he's got to work this summer and he's starting to make changes, which already indicate they're going to be a serious threat next season. And just to come back to what you were saying earlier about the managerial bounce awards. Now, Gainsborough picked up 33 points under Curtis Woodhouse, which is one more than Daz picked up for Scarborough. But don't forget, he went into Scarborough a bit later than when Curtis was appointed. So I had a look at the points per game, and Scarborough's was better than Gainsborough's. That's how well Daz Kelly did. Now, I know in a couple of the shows towards the end of the season, we kind of talked about whether he could pull off a charge for the top five. And I actually think we decided he'd probably just run out of games because the others had games in hand on Scarborough, which probably would have just left them a bit short. But that just shows the trajectory that they were on under him. I've just made the case for Woodhouse, but Kelly's points per game was better than even his was.
And Tyrrell, you're saying about him going into a toxic environment there at Scarborough. At Hyde United, they've been relegated 3 years on the spin. And all right, it took him a year to turn it around, but did he? You know, he really turned it around.
Swampy, I'll come to you for the next manager. And we're staying in Yorkshire. Chris Hardy at Whitby. He's on your list. He's on Simo's list as well. I think we discussed this a couple of times in these special shows. Whitby weren't too far off of the playoffs. You know, there was the FA Cup run in there, the famous FA Cup run, where he had to play with three goalkeepers. I mean, Whitby have had a very strong season and a much stronger showing than in recent years.
He's been 5 years at the club. His key ambition was to develop young players and bring young players that have fallen out of the pyramid. Ex-league players that, you know, were let go from academies and develop those. So he's always had a mentality of playing attacking style football, good quality football. And every time I've been there through an FC perspective, they've always put a good show on. 31 games this season, they won 14. And I honestly believe they had the real chance of being one of the playoff contenders.
Mike's gave a good balanced team, similar to what he did a couple of years ago when he really just missed out on playoffs. He's got capability rebuilding, which he's going to have to do again this year. So I'm kind of excited to see what he can do for 2021.
Let's go to Nantwich. We mentioned earlier, it was you, Bick, wasn't it, saying... I can't remember which club you were comparing him to. Mickleover, wasn't it? You were saying John McGrath would be good to. It'd be good to try and emulate what Nantwich have done. Following Phil Parkinson, Dave Cook, they've not really broke stride, have they?
No, exactly. And every summer, a bigger club comes in, swoops for their best players, and they recruit really, really well every single time. Dave Cook's got his head screwed on. He's a fantastic manager.
He's taken the mantle from Parkinson and continued to play that good quality football. I mean, they had three games in hand over Lancaster with 52 points. They play that great quality, attractive football, and they're just good all over the pitch.
The wheels could have come off at Nantwich when Parkinson left. We can't underestimate just what a good job Dave Cook's done and continues to do.
That's exactly the point I would make just to finish off on Nantwich, in that sometimes with managers like Cookie, that sustained excellence can make us complacent and you go, oh, well, Nantwich are there. Of course they are, because that's what Nantwich do. And I think that's a little bit unfair. I think because then you'll look at other managers who maybe had a spike in their performance, and that's why we lean towards them. Nantwich, yes, were just outside the playoff places when the season finished. But as Swampy said, they had the games in hand, and I do wonder whether they would have pipped certainly Lancaster, you know, and done enough to yet again make the playoffs. He's not quite been able to make that leap to the National League North yet, but I fully expect them to be there again next season, and that is only a positive reflection on Dave Cook.
Let's go on to Lancaster City then, and spoilers, everyone. And not since Tundee we had a one-sided vote selection like this on last week's show. Everyone, including Mark and James Gordon, who can't make the show this week, have said Mark Fell at Lancaster City.
No, Ben, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? No, there's always one, isn't there?
You mean there's always Swampy?
There's always Swampy, yeah. James, come to you. Mark Fell, we can't understate just what's been achieved at Lancaster, can we, really?
Yeah, what a turnaround from last season. And again, it's a tough one to really say, but I'll also explain how he's managed to do it, because he's got such a good quality side that he's managed to get the most out of under difficult circumstances, not just on a playing field, but on his own personal side as well. A great achievement for him to be able to put Lancaster in the position they were. We saw it towards the end of last season, coming round, but this year, they went full on. He brought the players that they needed to, and all season long, they're the one side that hasn't necessarily dropped away from the race.
And to be fair, they could have, because there was a mini slip, wasn't there? And the wheels could have come off quite easily, but they didn't. They stuck around.
I mean, Lancaster have been through a little bit of every emotion this season, and we'll never know if they could have hung on to get in the top five, and what an amazing achievement that would have been if they could have done it. I suspect they probably would have just fallen out, but that would not have undermined what they've achieved this season. They're one of only a couple of teams to have already surpassed their points total for the previous season when the season was curtailed in March. That's a sign of the improvement that they made. I mean, we've talked on previous shows, without repeating it too much, that they were one of the classic teams where the individuals made a sum that was greater than that kind of individual star quality. But that's because that manager put that group together in the way that he did. And we need to mention the fact, obviously, they were second to South Shields. And that's when the results did dip ever so slightly. And I know he's spoken on the record to say he feels gutted about that because he wasn't around and they stumbled ever so slightly. He did come back earlier in the new year, but you have to factor that in about what Lancaster have done with this real roller coaster of emotions, of the high of challenging at the top, the manager having to take some time out, the impact that will have had on the dressing room emotionally, and also in fact, in terms of their leader wasn't there. Then he comes back. So to still have been in the conversation, even if I do think they might just have missed out, is an absolutely tremendous achievement. It really is.
Overachieving side of the year award. I mean, it's Lancaster City all day long.
Baseford, Steve Chettle.
They actually took quite a big step forward compared to the previous season when they ended up missing out on the playoffs last season. Don't forget, they ended up down in seventh. I think they would have made the top five this time around. The numbers back that up in terms of the trajectory that they were on. The caveat there, of course, is the resources he's got available in order to do that, which is probably why he doesn't feature in anyone's list. But there's no doubt that he's one of those ones where you sit down and go, right, has the manager met expectation when you're kind of drawing up your list? Well, yes, my expectation is that they would be in the playoffs. So he's done a good job, but he's delivered probably what was expected, which is why he doesn't feature on the manager of the year shortlist, if that makes sense.
I've got purely on football, who would have been my top three, and the managers and the teams that they run. And that would be South Shields, Basford and FC. Sorry, Basford produce great quality football. They're a really, really good team to watch. But I was basically purely on football, that not on everything else with it, because there's a lot more besides than just the quality of football when we come to making these decisions. But absolutely superb. Good manager. You can see them, they've got huge plans going forward as a football club. They want to be a league football club. They made no bones about it, like same as South Shields. And therefore, I could only see them doing something similar again next season. More investment and a club that is going places.
I mentioned earlier, Simo, about the difference between the feeling that you've got when we were discussing Michelover Sports and Radcliffe. Both had the same points. And we could say the same about Warrington and Baseford, but both had the same points. Yet you'd argue Steve Chettle was, it's been a solid season. They've met expectations and there's a springboard for next year. But with Paul Carden, I mean, what a season they've had in the fact that, you know, it doesn't feel like they've had a great season, but they're third. And when you judge it by what happened last year and the tail end of last season and the punch in the stomach that must have had and the number of injuries Warrington have had a good year. So it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, disclaimer here for me, I think Card is one of the best managers in the league. There's no argument for me on that. And he's proved that consistently since he's gone in at Town. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit today about going into circumstances where you've got a kind of psychological rebuild to do. Well, he absolutely had that over the summer. They're the only team in history not to be promoted from the Northern Premier League as playoff winners because they had to go and play another game. And I think you can underestimate the scar that potentially leaves. And I do think that kind of hung over their season a little bit. You know, they were third when the season was curtailed, which is exactly where they finished last season. So he's maintained that level of excellence that they had. The reason that we've kind of ummed and ahed a little bit about Town this season is, you know, they've drawn 13 games. You know, that's kind of held them back from mounting any sort of challenge to South Shields for the title. And those draws have contributed to quite a significant dip in their points per game. They were at 2.1 last season, way, way below that this season. Do I still think they would have made the playoffs? Yes, I do think they would have made the playoffs. I don't know whether they would have won them because I don't think they would have been the best team in them. But I'll get, just last point on this, you know, we talk about Dave Cook, we kind of take for granted a sustained excellence. I think we are at risk of doing that with Paul Carden.
I was going to say, though, I mean, we spoke about the draws all the way through the season. They've only been beaten five times. South Shields have been beaten six times.
Yeah.
The team who finished second was FC United. And I'll come to you, Swamper, for obvious reasons. Neil Reynolds, last season, obviously, it wasn't the best of years for FC United. If we look at Aston United, it, you know, relegation's out of step two. The following year, they're not always the best, but this year it's been one of the better seasons for FC United.
Yeah, I think there was always a worry with a new manager who comes in halfway through a season after the trials and tribulations and has 56 players in the squad, has made his mind up straight away before the last game of the season. He's getting rid of 99% of the squad. He retains two only. He made his choice and decision to bring certain players in he wanted. He got them very early doors. He was really happy with that. A good pre-season, a dreadful start to the season, the first three games, you know. But then it all clicked in, you know. Sunday didn't arrive for six games. And I just think the way the club is set up now, the way the players play, I think everyone knows if they come to watch FC United or Manchester home and away, well, this season, 124 goals scored whilst watching an FC United match. Yes, they conceded goals as well, 51 conceded, but they scored 73, more than anyone else in the division. Small squad, small budget, great football on show, really entertaining. And for me, if you're second in a division and you're showing and playing great quality football and enjoying it, and you've got to be a contender for manager of the season.
It's where you peg the expectations. I know we've had the running joke on this podcast all season of no expectations at FC. We're just here to have a lovely old time, score a few goals, smile on our faces. Now, I never bought that. It's a serious football club. It's a serious football team. Neil Reynolds wouldn't have even took the job if he just thought, oh, I'll just go over there and have a lovely time. Because he was having a lovely time at Bamber Bridge where he was really popular and could have stayed there however long as he wanted. So, and I'm not saying for a second that it was the other extreme, like we talked about some of the other clubs today, saying, well, we're definitely going to get promoted the first attempt. I'm not accusing the FC of that at all either. So that was where my confusion is, where to peg kind of, well, how did he do compared to what he was expected to do? I mean, Swampy does make a really good point. To bring in a virtually entire new squad and mould them into something that can, if they weren't going to overtake South Shields, certainly kind of kept them honest for a little while. I know that last game before the season was cancelled kind of nailed that South Shields were away in the distance. But nothing against Reynolds at all. It's just the others I've put on my list, kind of that mix of factors that we've talked about today. I think next season the expectation will be ratcheted up because I think they will be expected to challenge, if not for the title, certainly for the playoffs. And that's based on achievement this time around. I don't think that's unfair to put that on them. So that was where I've wrestled with it. I wasn't really sure. I know, like I say, the official line was...
Well, it was Ben's line. The official line was from the club that we wanted to be successful. I think the expectation from supporters Has always been one to watch entertaining football. That has been primarily the thing, entertainment football. However, now we're in a situation, and we've had that, we've done very well, you know, being promoted and had a good short history. However, we now have a manager that has proven that you can actually play really good attractive football and you can win. Be successful.
Yeah.
And win. He's a young manager, he's entertaining. I mean, listen, the list is very hard. I mean, you know, I'm being biased because obviously I've seen more LFC this season, but it's the fact that I know what the budget's like. I think most people know what the budget is. I think they've seen the football at FC United, Manchester, be it home or away. You go and watch FC United as the visitors or the home team, and you're going to enjoy a game of football. The crowd has a part of a bearing as well, because you feel like you're a big football match. Great atmosphere, great noise, great banter between supporters. And for me, the best game of the season was the 1-0 away at Nantwich. I mean, that just proved two top quality teams, top quality managers battling out in a great game of football. Not a boring, no one's prepared to make mistakes kind of game. It was one of total quality from start to the end, and that's what I want to see. And that's why all the managers we've discussed of our lists are all that kind of manager.
Let's talk about final club then, South Shields, Graham Fenton, Lee Picton. Simo, do we have to say that even though, you know, all the resources and all that, they were under a lot of pressure this season, a lot of pressure, yeah, and they rode it through?
That's where I do give them enormous credit, because, and the reason they're probably not figuring on a lot of lists is that thing that I come back to of, what did we expect them to do? We expected them to win the league. What did we expect them to do apart from winning the league? Do it in style, do it by a distance if we're going by Berkey's predictions. And they were on course to do that. That's why, that's why they're not on my list, because they've done what they were expected to do. However, I do think we need to be a little bit careful in that you can have all the resources in the world, you've still got to do the business. They do deliver it with style. They are a good team to watch. And they do have the burden of expectation in that everyone in the league, everyone around their club, just sits back and assumes, well, South Shields are going to win it because that's just the way it is. So
that aside, my goodness me, what a football team they are. They play some wonderful stuff. They're so attractive, easy on the eye. They can play the ball blindly. They know where he's going to be. They've got a management team that have been successful over a long period, with the exception of being promoted out of this division. That's the only thing they haven't done yet. And I think they need to get out of this division. And I understand the reason why they went down the route they did to try and get out of this division, not necessarily financially, but by going to court. Because I think if they do go to the National League North, they'll prosper and they'll go on and on and on. I think staying where they are here at the moment is holding them back.
The only caveat I would add is, you know, we talked about today about scar tissue for Warrington. What is going to be really, really interesting to me next season is what's the hangover going to be? Because they feel, and I do have enormous sympathy for this, and I'm on record having enormous sympathy for it, they do feel that they have been the victim of a big injustice in not being promoted this season. And the massive challenge for Fenton and Picton next season is how they steer a course away from that. Now, you can use that, you can kind of put yourselves in your bunker and say, right, we'll show you, and come out fighting, and that can be really effective. Or it can just needle away. And if they're under pressure or they're not top quickly next season, what will that do to the mood around the place? If other teams are breathing down the neck, and I do think some of the other teams you've mentioned today are going to be a lot closer to them next season, by the way, I'm fascinated to see how they're going to handle that. Because how do you stop those intrusive thoughts of, you know, oh God, we've got to go away to so-and-so on a Tuesday night, we should be in the National League North. And that is not going to be easy.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, when we come to this list now and to decide who our manager is for our team of the season, we're not really going to be talking about Basford, Warrington, FC or South Shields, which seems remarkable, really, Simo, in all fairness. But
why?
Simo, they're the four best teams in the league by
position. I get that, but we see this in the pro game, don't we? You know, whoever's the leading scorer wins the golden ball every year, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, whoever wins the league, manager of the year every year, blah, blah, blah. And I just think it's like, it's tedious. You know, what we've got to kind of be, it's so much more nuanced than that. What we need to avoid is whataboutery of people saying, yeah, but South Shields were the best team. I don't think anybody's disputing that South Shields were the best team, but you've got to, it's the whole package, isn't it, of how much money do they have to spend, what pressure were they under, you know, loads of different things that go into to make up the factors of being a manager of the season, which is why it's not, I don't think at all we're being contrarian not to have some of those guys right at the top of our list. For me, I always look at it of, right, you know, that whole mix of factors. If there was a vote, it would have been really interesting what the vote around the league would have been. Maybe it would have been Fenton and Pitts, and I don't know, but there is. I just like to see it a lot more. It's so much more complex, is the point I'm trying to make.
You know, we had something similar from an FC perspective when we did FC Radio. One of our radio commentators was absolutely astounded and absolutely distraught and disgusted with us that we never voted Tundy as player of the season.
There you go.
And we said, well, because we do think differently on FC Radio, because we think of other factors and other qualities. And I think that's what we do as commentators here and pundits and journalists, of which I include myself in none of those. And Ben tries to be all of them, but succeeds in none either.
I'm a podcaster, Swampy. That's my gig.
You are definitely something.
Yeah.
But I think you're right about we don't. It's not about who's top. It's not for me. It was all about entertainment, quality, budget, and all round just enjoyment of the game. I appreciate that Neil Redis isn't going to win it, but I've given my case, and I think the person who's going to win it actually is deserving of winning it because they have been steady. Unpredicted at the beginning of the season. If we all go back to the beginning of the season, who we predicted to be in the top five, they weren't there. And I think they're going to deserve the accolade of being the manager of the season, in fairness.
Well, let's try and drag it out for a couple more minutes before we say who it is. I've circled some candidates for this final discussion. No one voted John McGrath. I'm voting John McGrath. I'm putting him in the list. Right, Cal McCauley at Witton, Curtis Woodhouse. No one voted for Darren initially, but I think after our discussion, we're pouring Darren in because of the comparison with Gainsborough.
I don't think you can have Darren Kelly or Curtis Woodhouse in there, okay, because I think you've got to have been there from the start of the season.
I disagree. I think coming in October, late October, like Curtis did, is, you know, and the circumstances. We had this debate about Garrity, didn't we, and a couple of other. Yeah. Players, I suppose. I would. My only counter to that would be impact. The size of the impact gets Woodhouse on my list, and Daz is very much in.
And to be honest, Simo, and to be honest, Berkey, the season never ended. So should
never
we
happened.
Personally, you can include Curtis, and I think you personally can include Darren as well because they've done a tremendous job.
If we include Carl McCauley for working within a budget, Dave McGirt's got to be in discussion as well, hasn't he, for that. And when it comes to blowing away expectations and that kind of thing, Nick Gray, the mark on Nick Gray is basically we don't know how they would have got on in those games in hand. That's the only trouble.
Yeah.
That's the only downside. Chris Hardy at Whitby, Dave Cook at Nantwich, and Lancaster City's Mark Fell. So
I think Carl can't because they've done better in the previous two seasons. I think he'll be made up to have been in the conversation, but I don't think you can have Carl McCauley.
And I reluctantly agree.
We're scrubbing off Curtis Woodhouse and Darren Kelly for the reasons we said.
I'm voting for Curtis.
Okay, staying strong then.
I'm voting for Kelly.
Don't do this to me. All right, those two are still in the list. Chris Hardy.
I think he's right in the running. I think you look at year-on-year improvement was a big tick for me in kind of how much better they were compared to previous. I mean, it was only a couple of seasons ago where they finished like 20th or something. So, that, you know, the kind of broader picture is really encouraging for him. I think he's close. I just think one or two of the others are just a bit better. But
remember as well, Whitby, top 10 finishes in this division. They've only done it a couple of times in the last 25 years.
It's very rare, yeah. And they would have finished in the top 10 even if they didn't get in the playoffs, definitely.
And Blackett was a masterstroke. We have to say. I mean, I know we talked about Neil Reynolds on Sunday, but Blackett coming in at Whitby was a bit of a masterstroke, in all fairness, as well. Dave Cook.
I mean, to be able to go and watch Nantwich week in, week out as a supporter must be great because they play
they
great.
Are.
Yeah. I think we could have had any one of five, in fairness, and actually be manager of the season. This is a difficult thing.
I think we've delayed the inevitable enough. I mean, we made no secret of it during the discussion. Mark Fell picked up the majority of votes from our panel. I mean, it's hard
nominations. We all have to nominate three managers.
Yes,
we should spell that out.
It's hard to not agree with that, given expectation is the word, isn't it? And no one had the expectation what Lancaster was going to do this season.
No, they were brilliant, and he weaved magic. If they'd have finished fifth from bottom, people would have gone, oh, yeah, fair enough. Well, they've done well to avoid relegation, fair enough. We kind of expected it. But fifth from top, brilliant effort. Absolutely.
I think also that it's that body of work as well. When he come in October 2018, they were bottom of the league. So the broader context supports his case as well, that trajectory that they're on. I mean, I said I vote for Curtis, but I have absolutely no complaint whatsoever if Mark Fell gets the nod. None at all.
So, all that being said, are we basically saying Mark Fell?
Mark Fell, and then if we allow the assistant, Curtis Woodhouse.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Because Curtis is an assistant. There's always been
you can't
assistant.
Make up these rules just at the end of the show. That would be. Because you've had an haircut.
Well, we can't be going down assistant management. We can't be people.
I should say, just a bit on that.
Mark Fell's got a pretty good assistant manager in, is it Graham Lancashire?
Just Graham Lancashire, yes. in Lancaster.
Yeah.
So more for name fans.
There we go.
And indeed, they're in Lancashire, not far from the Fells of Cumbria.
Oh, yeah. And you've got the Lancashire Fells as well.
Lancashire Fells as well, of course, yes. There we go. Oh, we're good at this. We're good. We should have a show.
They've got a midfielder called Trough of Boland as well.
So, final thought then. This is the team. Ollie Martin from Radcliffe in goal. Jordan Hunter at South Shields at right back. Kieran Religi, Whitby's centre half at centre back. His partner will be Stefan Galinski from Baysford. Adam Dodd from FC United at left back. Alistair Waddicart, right wing for Bamber Bridge. Left wing will be Paddy Lane at Hyde United. Central midfield partnership of Luke Griffiths from FC and Ben Garrity at Warrington. Diego Di Girolamo at Buxton up front with Tunde Olabi from FC. And managing this epic team that will win the league by 30 points, James, Mark Fell at Lancaster.
I think I tweeted before, this whole exercise has actually been really good fun to kind of look back and celebrate some of the talent that we've got at this level. Some positions have been genuinely really, really difficult. Central midfield was particularly strong. The fullback show was great because we were able to celebrate kind of a lot of emerging players in that. And I think this one, you know, to finish it off, the breadth of managerial talent, you know, we've talked about different styles, but we've got some seriously good managers operating at this level, and we're very, very lucky to be able to kind of watch and enjoy it each week. So hopefully people have enjoyed it as much as we have putting it together, because it's been really good.
Well, that's the end of these special MPL shows. We hope you've enjoyed them.
We're not doing subs.
No, we're not doing subs. All radio stations, you'll be pleased to know, Spurker. Right, so let's congratulate Mark Fell for winning this. But just a big disclaimer, Mark, it's the MPL show. It means absolutely nothing. This was just an excuse for us to have a chat for the month of May and June. So that's the end of these shows. A big thank you to James Hayes for joining us.
Nice.
Big thank you to Swampet all the way from Belgium.
Au revoir, à bientôt, as you.
A big thank you to Mr. Ian Burke from 26-0.
Cheers, Ben.
A big thank you to Andrew Simpson, a non-league report from Cheshire.
No problem.
And also a big thank you as well to Matt Carruthers and to James Gordon as well for joining us through these shows. We're not sure when we're going to be back, but hopefully we'll be back soon with another MPL show. But in the meantime, you all have a lovely and safe summer, whatever you decide to do. And you'll be hearing from us again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.